So a very simple example of the phishing attack is what you can see on the slide. So it will come, and this is a example of ICICI Bank that I've taken. So it comes from ICICI Bank, but then a key here to note is which is the exact domain name that it comes from. So in this case, it comes from a different domain name, not ICICI.com or ICICIBank.com. So this domain name is also very important. When you're looking at websites, so just see what is the exact domain name. So it could be ICICI.bank or it could be IC.IC.IC. You know, so this is a different domain name from ICICIBank.com, correct? So it comes from a different domain name, and the email says that you have to update your bank account details, and it will sound very legitimate. It has the bank's logo. It will have the name of the person below, the customer care advisory. It would also have a toll-free number and things like that. So it will sound as a very legitimate email as such. Next, what you do is you click on that and it will ask you for certain information. So it will ask you for username, password. It will also ask you for your transaction password. It will ask you for your mobile number, debit card number, debit card pin. Now get this thing into picture. A bank will never ask you for your debit card information. It will never ask you for your debit card pin, right? So this is a kind of a phishing attack. So people who are aware about these kind of attacks will never respond, obviously. But then these attacks are in the market right now. So as a good citizen, what's important is when you see such kind of activities, then write into the bank's information security department. So probably they can take certain action around it. The next attack that we will discuss is about social engineering, and social engineering has a very big area to cover. So phishing is again a part of the social engineering attack. So it is, as I said, it is achieved by tricking users into clicking certain links or physically gaining access to a computer through deception, and there could be different types of social engineering attacks. So, and I'll discuss a few ways in which these attacks happen. So first is baiting. Now what does baiting mean? So bait is a kind of a bait that a fish gets, right? So bait is when an attacker leaves a malware infected physical device, so say for example something like a USB device, in a place where it is sure to be found. The finder then picks it up, uses the device and loads it into the computer, and unintentionally the software gets installed. So there are, as I said, there could be a lot of EXEs, there could be a lot of Trojans inside that particular USB, and this is a way through which the infected worms could be spread. The other could be a phishing attack. So as I said, phishing is again a subset of the social engineering attacks. It could be a spear phishing. So spear phishing is, now phishing we all understand, right? So you get a different email and you are bound to probably provide the customer information. But then a spear phishing is something like, which is very targeted to a set of individuals. What people generally do is, people, say for example, people who are above 60 years or 70 years, they are not very IT savvy as such. So the spear phishing is an attack which is targeted to them. So even they would want to use the internet, but then they are susceptible to divulging this information. So spear phishing is an attack which is tailored to a specific set of individuals, or it could be a organization as such. One more type of attack is that is called as a vishing attack. Now vishing is actually a combination of voice and phishing. So rather than using an email, so it uses a social engineering over the phone to get the personal information. So very often than not, you receive a crank call from the bank saying that you have a lot of points in your credit card account, which is bound to get expired, and this is an actual attack that happened with my father. So what happened is he got a call from the credit card department of the bank. They said that you have, say, X number of points in your credit card account, which is bound to expire, and as you have been a loyal customer to us for so many years, we will transfer this money into your savings bank account. Now, just understand this very clearly. A credit card company will never transform that points into money and give it to you, right? So you, either you have to spend it somewhere, or probably, you know, you can adjust it against your payment that you make on your credit card. But then this is a classic case where the people that call you, they sound so legitimate, they sound so professional on the phone that they would want to, you know, get information from you. So this was a classic case that happened with my father. So this is a phishing attack. The next is there could be an attack which is pre-texting. So just like a phone call, there could be a text email or a text message, and attacker, say he, in the pretext of getting a personal loan, you have to give out certain information. There could be other attack in the form of a scareware. So it tricks the victim into saying that, okay, your machine has been infected with malware, and you have to, you know, if you have to get rid of the malware, you have to install a few other programs which will get rid of the malware. So that's, it's actually a scareware. There's one more thing called as a water holing. So water holing is when the attacker attempts to compromise a specific group of people by infecting websites that are, that they are known to visit in order to gain network access. So you know that, you know, there is a set of individuals who, say for example, visit say moneycontrol.com, then they would provide a different version of moneycontrol.com, or probably hack into or probably hack into that website and get the user information. Then there could be a diversion theft. So in this, the social engineers, they trick into a delivery of a courier. So courier is something that you get into your place, but then using a social engineering attack, the actual address is, you know, diverted and the courier gets delivered into a new address. And this is a very famous quid pro quo. So a quid pro quo attack is when the social engineer he pretends to pursue something in exchange for the target's information. So say for example, the hacker selects a group of random numbers, and they would say, so this particularly happens in any enterprise organization. So you would receive a call, the hacker would, you know, try to sound off as if he's from tech support, and he would ask you that, is there any issue with your machine, are all the programs functioning correctly. So 8 of them would say no, there is absolutely say no issues with the machine. But then there could be 2 people who would say that, okay, there is some issue. And what the attacker would do is that he would say that, give me a remote of, or a remote session of your PC. So that's where he will probably, you know, install a few applications, and then these applications could monitor what kind of usage is there. There could be key loggers that could be installed. So when you go into a banking site, your user ID and password could be given to the hacker. So this is a kind of attack which would happen. So it's called as a quid pro quo. And so as I said, so the social engineering is a very vast field. And what reminds me is a case of Frank William Abagnale, right? So you would have seen the movie Catch Me If You Can. So if you haven't, then I would suggest go ahead and watch it. So it's considered, Frank was considered as one of the most experts in the case of social engineering. So he used various techniques to impersonate at least 8 different people. So this included a pilot, a doctor, a lawyer, everyone, right? So, and after this time, so he later became a FBI consultant and he started his own financial advisory firm. But then social engineering is very vast. There could be attacks like the honey trap attack. So where the attacker, the social engineering attacker, pretends to be an attractive person to interact with a person online, and then get the information in place. There could be things like tailgating. So it's very common in companies. They have the access controls in place, but then very often than not, you don't swipe the card, you just tailgate. So that's again a kind of attack. There could be rogue security devices. and we'll cover that in the wireless attacks that happen. So this is basically a rogue access point that acts as a legitimate access point, right? So what happens is, say for example, you are in a company and the company has a Wi-Fi SSID which says that Wi-Fi access underscore say the company name, so which is say for example XXX, right, or ABC.com. So you would have ABC underscore user. So that's the name of the Wi-Fi signal that you are supposed to latch on. Now there could be another access point which could be powered on by a hacker, and it would have probably the same name. Then it becomes very difficult for you to know that, you know, which is the exact access point through which I should latch. So that's the kind of a rogue access point attack which happens in case of wireless deployments. Okay, next we discuss a DDoS. Now DDoS is called as a distributed denial of service attack. Now what happens is in a DDoS attack, the web server that gives the information, there's a lot of illegitimate traffic that comes and hits that web server. Now what happens is the server will obviously give that information to all the requests that are coming in. A very simple case, right? A server is supposed to say send a response to 100 requests that it receives simultaneously. This is just a hypothetical number. Now just imagine if there are 100 simultaneous requests, it might come from India, it might come from Pakistan, Bangladesh, USA, Nepal, Turkey, Uzbekistan, right? Russia for that matter. So if there are 100 simultaneous requests that come from all the different geographies and simultaneously bombard the server, then the server it actually times out. And what happens is, in between, if there is a legitimate request that comes in, that request is cannot be served. So this is a classic example of a distributed denial of service. So a DDoS attack attempts to disrupt the normal web traffic and take a website down by flooding the system and the network with more number of requests that it can handle, right? So this is a classic attack for an e-commerce company, because the entire business happens online. It becomes all the more sense if that particular server is down, then that means no users will be able to log in. Virus. So we all understand what a virus is, and probably this is the most abused word in case of IT security. So a virus is a piece of malicious code that is loaded onto a computer without the user's knowledge. So it could be, say, propagating from a USB stick, or it could be from some other's hard drive that you connect to your machine, or it could be from the internet. So there are a lot of ways in which a virus can enter your computer. But then, so it's, as I said, it's loaded onto a computer without the user's knowledge, and it can replicate itself and spread on to all the machines that are there in the network. So it basically gets attached, and then it'll replicate itself. So that's a virus. If you have to talk about worms, so worms are similar to viruses in which they are self-replicating, but then they do not attach themselves to any specific program as such, right? So worms that way are independent, but then they are in your system, they hunt for vulnerabilities that are there in the system, and then they report this kind of vulnerabilities to the person who has created this worm, right? So it basically goes back to the command and control center, who actually controls the worm, and then probably, you know, controls the entire machine behavior. Now talking about worms, there was a very famous attack called as StruckNex, right? So StruckNex was a malicious computer worm. It was first discovered in 2010. So and although it was actually developed way back in 2005. Now, I'll just take a few minutes to explain this, because it's really interesting, right? And probably I see a lot of goosebumps, because this is a real life case of how countries are involved in getting destructive things done. So StruckNex as a virus or a worm, it targets SCADA systems. Now SCADA systems are basically a kind of PLC systems. It was developed by Siemens, Now, SCADA systems, they are the heart of any nuclear power plant. Now, you are probably, you know, you can understand the kind of impact that it would have done. So, SCADA system, these systems are designed to control the logics behind entire nuclear power plant, say how the machinery has to run, what time, and the specifics of it. So, Struknex, it targets the SCADA systems and it was believed to be responsible for a substantial damage in Iran's nuclear plant. Now, although there isn't any public evidence for it, but then Iran has come out publicly and admitted responsibility that this was a joint attack which was carried out by American Israeli cyber cells. Now, don't quote me anywhere, but then you can Google for Struknex. So that is Struknet, and it was a real famous attack. So what actually happened is Struknex specifically targets the PLC controllers. These are the programmable logic controllers. So these controllers actually control the heart of any power plant. So this allows the automation of electrical processes such as those needed to control the machinery. And in this particular case, it was the centrifugal machines for the nuclear power plants. Now, what happened is Struknex compromised all the Iranian PLCs. It collected the information from the industrial systems, and this caused the centrifugal machines. So these basically machines, they separate some nuclear resources. So and they have to be spun at a specific speed. So if there is a centrifugal machine, this machine has to spin at some specific RPM. Now, what this particular worm did, Struknex did, was using that particular logic and vulnerability in the SCADA system, it entered and it controlled the behavior of the centrifugal machines to such an extent that it started spinning the centrifugal machines faster. And what happened is, because of that, it caused a lot of destruction of the nuclear things. So it is almost estimated that 1/5 of the nuclear energy, or 1/5 of the entire nuclear power plant's resources, were wasted by this kind of impact. Now, it's, you can probably, you know, as I said, Google it to get more details into it. But yes, Struknex was one of the classic cases of a worm attack, and there were a lot of intricacies into it. So if you're interested, go ahead, read into it. Next is malware. Now, malware is again a very broad term used to describe any kind of unrequired activities which is intended to harm a computer and all. So it encompasses many things. So it could be a Trojan, it could be a worm, it could be a virus, spyware. Everything is considered a malware. Trojan. So Trojan is a specific type of malware which disguises itself as a legitimate program. Say for example something like an antivirus, but it's actually a Trojan in between. Now, and there is a very good story how Trojan got its name. So when Greeks wanted to get into the city of Troy, so what they did was they built a Trojan horse, and they, using the Trojan horse, they were at the gate, and when the gates were opened, the Trojan horse, actually there were soldiers coming out of that. So this is how out of the giant, I should say, the giant horse, it was presented to the Trojan army as a gift of peace. So, and they basically won the war. So, Trojans basically, to put the point across, they disguise themselves as legitimate programs so that users would want to install them, but then they actually cause a havoc. Ransomware. Now, ransomware is one of the most fast growing forms of cyber attacks. So ransomware is a type of malware that demands payment. So viruses and all, they would cause a destruction, but then ransomware is something which would ask the user to pay a certain amount if you want the systems to work in the conditions that they were working previously. So it does not actually guarantee the data, but then yes, they ask for a handsome amount of payment. And users are, they are bound to give that payment because just imagine if there is a mission critical application and data on your machine, and it's subject to a ransomware attack, and the entire data is encrypted or garbled, then you have no choice but then satisfy the needs of the hacker. Just a case. So there was a very famous WannaCry ransomware attack. Probably you would have heard it. So it was in 2017 where the WannaCry ransomware, it was basically a crypto worm which targeted machines that were running on Microsoft Windows as an operating system. And what it did was it encrypted the entire user data, and they say that users had to pay that kind of money, but not in the normal form, but then users had to pay it in Bitcoin. So when you pay it in Bitcoin, it becomes all the more difficult to track where the money has gone, where the currency has gone and stuff like that. So hackers were very intelligent to use that. So it propagated through something called as Eternal Blue, and exploit that was developed by USA's National Security Agency for old Windows systems. And Eternal Blue was stolen and leaked by a group called as the Shadow Brokers, and it took them a few months to actually come up with this kind of attack. So ransomware, to put it very shortly, it basically asked for money from the users for the data to be de-encrypted or to be brought back to its normal state, but then there is absolutely no guarantee that even after paying that amount you get your original data back or not. The next attack that we talk about is a spyware or a adware. So spyware or adware, it gets installed on your machine without your knowledge, and when you open that attachment, so you see a lot of malicious links. So it monitors what kind of activity that you do on your machine. It collects your personal information, and then there could be a lot of ads that are sent onto your machine. So say for example you play a lot of online games which are not secure, there will be a lot of adware that could be installed on your browser, and then they could slowly take this information and then send it back. So say for example a lot of card games can then pop up on your screen, or a lot of say screen savers ad can pop up on your screen. So these are the kind of adware that get infected, that infect your machine, and slowly and steadily they send this information back to their centers. The next attack that we'll talk about is a SQL injection. So SQL or SQL is a structured query language. Now it basically addresses the vulnerability, security vulnerability, which is present in an application software. So a SQL injection or a SQL attack, it exploits the vulnerability in the application code that is written. And the successful SQL attacks will force a server to provide access, or it could actually modify the data. So I'll not get into the details because it's too technical, but then SQL injection is again a kind of attack which is a little technical in nature, and the point to remember is that it exploits the application vulnerability. The next attack that we talk about is MTM, that is the man in the middle attack. Now this is a very common attack when we talk about public Wi-Fi systems. So what generally happens is that in case of a non-secure public Wi-Fi, what happens is there is a person who sits in between the wireless access point and you, and he could actually see all the information that is passing on. So attackers then probably they could disguise themselves as rogue devices and do a man in the middle attack, and then they could cipher off all the information. So just be careful when you use any kind of non-secure public Wi-Fi. Please don't use it in the first place, or probably switch on to your mobile data and all. So there is a man in the middle attack. So just to briefly describe, user logs on to a unsecure public Wi-Fi, and there's an attacker in the middle which senses, or there's a packet sniffer involved which sniffs all the information that goes on between your device and the access point. The last attack that we'll talk about is the vulnerabilities in the web application and the networks. So criminals are constantly identifying new threats in the system. So As you would have seen in the ransomware attack, so it exploited a vulnerability in the Windows system. The Stuxnet attack, which brought down the Iranian nuclear power plant, it exploited a vulnerability in the SCADA system. So there are a lot of inherent vulnerabilities which should be closed, and that is why there are things like VAPT, which are done by large organizations. So this is called as vulnerability assessment and penetration testing. So there are a lot of tools involved, a lot of professional services involved, which actually look at plugging the loopholes in the applications, and so that no attacker gets in. The last attack that we would see is something called as a day zero attack. Now, what is a day zero? Now, so I'll just read out the terminology. So, using the outdated or unpatched software, again, it exploits the system vulnerabilities. It opens up opportunities for criminals or hackers to take advantage of vulnerabilities to bring down the system. A day zero exploit can occur when a vulnerability is made public before a patch or a solution is rolled out. So, there are a lot of day zero attacks. So, say for example, there is Adobe software that runs on everyone's machine, right? Say Adobe version 11.4, just an example. It might have some inherent vulnerability which the attacker might know, and they would launch attack probably across the world. So, just the case of say the WannaCry ransomware, right? So it explored the vulnerability within the Windows operating system. So it was a day zero attack. So people do not have a patch for any day zero attack. So say if I launch an attack right now, exploring some vulnerability, the OEMs or the companies who own the software will take some time to come up with a patch like that. But then just imagine the kind of havoc the virus, the worm, the Trojan, the malware would have done in those time till the patch is launched. So that is a day zero attack. So there are things like say sandboxing solutions which take care of day zero attacks. So broadly you could see, so what I've done is I've listed down few of the attacks that are very common. So we've spoken about DOS attack, phishing, identity theft, credit cards, emails. So a couple of things that we haven't spoken about is a salami slicing attack. So what happens in a salami slicing is the hacker very willfully, he would deduct say 1 or 2 rupees from your account every day, or probably once in a quarter or something of that sort. So imagine if a person has say 5 lakh rupees in an account and there is say a theft of say 5 rupees, then he would not even be bothered to report it. So that's a salami slice attack. And the attacker basically attacks so many users, so he has a hefty amount as such. Cyber stalking is when people actually follow you over the web, stalk where you go, your activities, and they troll you basically. Data dealing is when incorrect data is entered, so and there are programs written. So in case of a data entry job, the person actually manually enters the data, but then if there is a program in place which exploits the vulnerability, and it basically if it ensures that the data you enter is not correct, it's a erroneous data. So that's data deedling. Webjacking is kind of hijacking, but for the web. So a lot of websites get controlled by other companies, other parties, other countries for that matter. So say very recently the Indian crime branch site was hacked by Pakistani hackers, and they posted some obscene content over there. Similarly is the case with different countries. So there are say this information site was hijacked, and you would see say the hackers posting videos and stuff like that. So that's webjacking. Logic bombs are when inside the code there is a logic written which would trigger some kind of another event. So say if there is a salary processing within the application, then probably a different code is run. So it happens at a code level. So yes, I think you would have seen the different kind of attacks, and I spoke about it giving you examples. So just be sure that you know you are not susceptible to man in the middle attack or a phishing attack, So ensure that, you know, things are in place. Some very famous cyber attacks in India. So there was the Union Bank of India. So attack. So it happened through a phishing email sent to an employee. Hackers accessed the credentials to execute a fund transfer, and this was this was for what, 171 million rupees. $171 million. WannaCry ransomware, I already spoke about it. Data theft at Zomato. So the names, email IDs were hassled, passwords of some users were stolen. This data again is, it could be monetized. Then there is Pentia ransomware. So I think India is a region, because there are a lot of users who use the internet, and the systems or the tight security measures are not in place. So it becomes all the more susceptible to a cyber attack of this sort.